Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law. Lawmen is putting an end to my running.
High fly ball to center field. It's pretty well toward the wall. Oh, my God!
Welcome back to another edition of the Black and Gold Blitz. I am Jeff Harbin, editor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, and with me, as always, is Christopher Carter, contributor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. Chris, I don't know if you agree with me. I think that Renegade has somehow become the Pittsburgh theme song in terms of sports. Do you agree, or is that just a Steelers thing?
You know, it's still just a Steelers thing because not everyone knows what Renegade is, and I find that out when I go abroad from Pittsburgh, and more people are just like, Renegade, what's that? But I think it's slowly becoming that, because the more and more people that understand what it is and we talk about it, the more and more people like it.
Absolutely. It's a great song, and you hear that new intro we played today, and we like to do some new intros as the show progresses. But that call, that great Greg Brown call, that game against the Cardinals last year, absolutely outstanding. Hey, we're ready for a whole new slate of talk. I mean, last week we talked about Penn's cap. We talked about the Pirates, how dismal they were. Things have changed since then. Chris, go ahead and talk about our sponsors, and let's get right into things.
Yes. First, really quick shout-out to our sponsor, Frank Walker Law. We provide real talk, real experience, real results. If you have any problems, regarding criminal law, personal injury, anything of that sort, Frank Walker is the best attorney in Western Pennsylvania and Northern West Virginia. He's barred in both states. He practices. He has a lifetime experience. Go visit his website at frankwalkerlaw.com or call in at 412-212-3878. We'll give you a full rundown later in the show, reminding you in case you want to learn more about that. But let's get into the show, Jeff.
Absolutely. Let's do it. Well, what are you going to talk about first? We got a lot of stuff on the docket.
So I figured we could start off with the hot topic, since tomorrow night is the crucial game 6 between the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Washington Capitals. The Penguins dropped game 5 in D.C. To a tough Capitals team. Ovechkin got on the board early for them, and they were on the hustle. Seemed like they were a bit frustrated. Murray lost his first playoff game. You know, there were a lot of things that were just like, man, you know, it was tough. But at the same time, it wasn't as big of a deal because the Penguins have put themselves in a really good position, being up 3-1 at the time and now up 3-2. They got a game at home to close it out. And especially after surviving the game four without Chris Letang, I think this team has every bit of reason to be confident in themselves right now. And one thing that I really liked from Coach Sullivan, he spoke about how we cannot become the old Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, because we saw, you know, Crosby and Malkin, they were getting frustrated. They were complaining to the refs a little bit. He said that, you know, we're done with that. We're not being that anymore. We got to focus and stick to our game. What did you see? Did you get to watch game 5? Because it was kind of tough to stomach after a while.
I did watch all the game. It was difficult. However, I saw this coming. I live in Maryland. Most people know that to follow the website. I've watched a lot of Capitals hockey because it's always on television over here. And this is a team that is really, really good first. Let me emphasize that. Like, the Capitals, they won the President's Cup for a reason, the President's Trophy. I think that's also important that, you know, and this has nothing to do with the fact that I predicted the Penguins in 6 anyways before the series even started. But that's a game that you just saw the Capitals play with more desperation. Their backs are against the wall. They're in front of their home crowd. That's a very tough situation to go into and win for the Pittsburgh Penguins. The pressure now is on the Penguins to win at home. And this is huge. If you can't put them out, of their misery at Consol Energy Center on Tuesday night and you give them life, and you have to go back to D.C. in Game 7, I'm sorry, I don't like their chances. Pittsburgh has shown that they're a team that rarely, I think only once, maybe, since Sullivan was announced the head coach, they went on a four-game losing streak when he first was hired, was promoted, I should say. After that, they rarely ever lose back-to-back games. It might have only happened once the entire time that he has been the head coach after that four-game stretch. I don't think they're going to lose Tuesday night. I expect Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby to play, and Crystal Tang, I'll throw him in the mix as well, to play a spirited form of hockey, to be at their best. Because let's be honest, they've been kind of just average. It's hard to say that about players of their caliber, but it's the truth. They've been getting scoring from Matt Cullen, Patrick Hornquist, all these players, Eric Fair, not Crosby. He hasn't scored a goal this series. Malkin's only scored once, and Letang has been held off the goal scorer list as well. Those players need to step up, and if they do, I think the Pittsburgh Penguins punch their ticket to the Eastern Conference Finals to play the Tampa Bay Lightning. What do you think about the upcoming Game 6?
I think it's important. I think it's crucial, because I agree with you. The Capitals are no slouch. Like, you know, it's not like they're playing a team that is hot, you know, out of nowhere, and you know they're lucky to be there. The Capitals, they were the best team in hockey for most of the season, and then and now it's at a point where you have them on the ropes, and it's not like they're the Browns. It's not like they're a team that, oh, now they believe in themselves. It's like, no, you're open. They have the door open, and they know they have to kick it down to get through. So they absolutely have to win. If you send them back to Game 7, they're going to be pumped. Their crowd's going to be pumped, and it's going to be the hardest game. I'd say that winning Game 7, if they lose Game 6, would be a harder win than winning Game 4 without Chris Letang, just because of the environment, just because of the momentum and everything. That all is going to be playing a factor in my eyes. One thing that I think is going to be a big plot line is, how do Crosby and Malkin and Letang respond? Like you said, one thing that a lot of people have taken note, like you said, is that fact that the superstars have not been the story for the Penguins in this series, let alone most of the playoffs. You know, Hornquist has the most goals for the team in the playoffs at 5. You know, Crosby does have the most points at 10. But I mean, between you got a lot of the guys that aren't the big names on the team. Hornquist with 5 goals, Bonino with 8 assists, and of course, you know, there's Matt Murray in goal. He is playing like a superstar right now, despite not being a big name, you know, as a rookie. But you know, Crosby and Malkin, they were talking about it, about having to play harder, wanting to score more, and wanting to do more. But if you there was an article in the Post Gazette earlier today. And it was really interesting, because both of them were saying they want to do more, they want to be more involved, they definitely want to score more, but they also tempered that with the fact that we are not going to get outside of our game, because in the past the Penguins have geared their entire game to get Crosby and Malkin the best chances to score. And they echoed what Sullivan said, and I like this whenever coaches and players are lining up with their talking. Because it means that they're most likely on the same page. But Sullivan is saying, you know, we developed a system to become a great, to take great players and make a great team, not take great players and let them be great. And that's what's gotten the Penguins to this point in the playoffs. And I think that what they have to do in Game 6 is stick to that system, keep fighting, keep grinding it out, work their game. And you know what? And the thing is, and this is what Crosby said in the paper. He said we have to take advantage of when we get those opportunities. And yes, they're more limited because they're not focusing the entire offense around them. But it just means that when they get those shots, they got to be able to hit them. And that's what a great leader does. And both of those guys, in my opinion, are the two top leaders on the team. And you know, and that also goes for Chris Letang. You know, when they get those opportunities, they got to put them home, and they got to put the pressure on the Caps to make more plays. And as great as Murray has been in these playoffs, you can't put it all on him and expect him to have great 47 save games like he has in this series. You got to use the superstars have to step up, take command, and take charge of this series, and I think they will tomorrow night. For a big Game 6 closeout to send them to the next round.
Yeah, I think if you look at this game from a schematic standpoint, the Penguins have to stay out of the penalty box. The Washington Capitals have the best power play in the NHL. They proved that in Game 5. And ultimately, if the Penguins can keep out of the box and maybe get in, you know, I think the power play is where I want to see Malkin and Crosby do better. Those are the times where you get those chances. Those are the times where you can kind of set up individual players for specific shots. And when you're playing 5-on-5, that's not always the case. Like you said, you can't go out and do things out of your normal routine or go out of the way of what you normally do business, because that's going to ultimately compromise the team. But on the power play, though, you can work a little bit of magic. And so I think that's where I want to see the Penguins improve, is in two areas. I guess both are related to the power play. One, stay out of the stupid penalty box. None of these stupid tripping calls, the flashes, the retaliatory stuff. And you saw Sullivan. He was reaming those players out. And you know what? I love that. Because too often you see an NHL coach, when they pan down and he's just standing there staring off into space. And he's getting in their ear. And they tend to respond to him. So if he's pretty pissed off, I expect them to have a spirited effort coming up. And that's going to be an exciting game. So, again, that's Tuesday night. I believe that game, the puck drops at 8 o'clock, and I'm sure that's going to be nationally televised on NBC Sports. Quick prediction for you, Give me your score for Game 6. I'm assuming we're both going to pick the same team, but I want to know what you think about it and whether it's going to be a high-scoring game or not.
I'm saying it's going to be 4-2. I think the Pens go to work. I think they get some early goals. The cap, I think it's going to be 2-1 going into the third, and then in the third, the Pens are going to get a big goal. And then towards the end, the Capitals are going to pull Holtby, and Ovechkin's probably going to get a goal to make it a one goal game. And then they're going to need to keep the goalie out. And then, the Penguins are going to get an empty netter, making it 4-2 and sending the Capitals home crying.
All right. I'm going to go with 3-2 Penguins win. It's going to be a nail biter. Think back to those earlier games as one-goal games where you literally had no idea what was going to win. Don't be surprised if it's a superstar scoring the game-winning goal for the Penguins. Penguins win. Penguins win the series. Game, set, match. On to Tampa Bay we go. And so that'll be fun to watch. Now, before we go any further, if you're listening live right now and you want to talk about anything Penguins, Pirates, or Steelers related, you can call in. The phone number is 347-850-8581. Again, it's 347-850-8581. We won't be taking calls until the end of the show, but if you want to call in and listen and then chime in when the time is right, you can certainly do that. And so, speaking of the time being right, it just seems like it hasn't been that right for the Pittsburgh Pirates recently. However, things did kind of rebound for the Pirates. They were swept by the Chicago Cubs in embarrassing fashion last week. They literally were outclassed in every stretch of every possible scenario, situation, individual player, they were outclassed by the Chicago Cubs. And like we talked about the Washington Capitals and the Penguins, the Chicago Cubs are a really, really good baseball team. And they just took four games in a row from the Washington Nationals, so it's not like the Pirates are alone. However, they did have a good response. They won 2 out of 3 against the St. Louis Cardinals over the weekend, and currently they are down 3-2 against the Cincinnati Reds as they start another NL Central Division Series in Cincinnati. So, what was your reaction first to the Cubs sweep, and then second, what was your reaction after the weekend series of the Cardinals?
Well, with the Cubs, you know, it was kind of like, you know, I hope it doesn't go the way I think it does, but then it went the way I thought it would. I was nervous. I was like, you know, outwardly, like, you know, I even told you, I think we could chase Arrieta. You know, but inwardly, I'm like, this is going to be ugly. And it was. And I think in the last game, you saw the culmination of where at least some of the Pirates are when Sean Rodriguez started losing it in the eighth inning. I don't know if you saw the exchange he had with the relief pitcher. I forget the relief pitcher's name right now. But Sean Rodriguez seemed to get upset that the relief pitcher was holding on to – he was speeding up and he was slowing down, which, you know, is part of a pitcher's strategy. You're supposed to try and mess with the batter every way, which way you can. And I think he said something, and then people came out of the Cubs dugout and started talking to him. And then he addressed them in a manner of saying, oh, if you have a problem, come over here and say it. And then the ump told Rodriguez to calm down. And this is the same Sean Rodriguez that, you know, was ready to fight people. And he got pulled from the game, and then he ended up beating the tar out of a Gatorade cooler, in the playoff game. So, like, you know, it's obvious that the Cubs are definitely in the Pirates' heads right now. or at least, you know, some of the Pirates' heads. I'm confident that, you know, the leaders in Andrew McCutchen and, you know, Cervelli and Liriano, I think that, like, the guys that are pushing the boat right now for the series and they're keeping everything afloat, I think that they're like, you know, hey, we just have to keep fighting. We'll get our shots at these guys. But, you know, right now the Cubs are playing lights out. I mean, Arrieta, he almost finally took a loss, but he didn't because they came back against the Nats. But, I mean, he looks on fire. Their lineup's on fire. They're crushing everything in their path. It's pretty crazy. And they said, I think, what are they, 23-6 right now, 25-6? But whatever their record is right now, it's astounding. And they said the only other two teams in the history of the major leagues that have had that record have gone on to win the World Series. So we can hope that they don't, that the Pirates can be part of the story that ends that. But, you know, right now I think the big story is that Jungho Kang had a big return. I was so excited to when I got the news that he was coming back, and I was so glad that I took the time to watch part of that game and catch it because he ended up in the first game of the series against the Cardinals this past weekend. He hit two home runs, one oppo and one that he absolutely crushed to the third level of Busch Stadium. It was just absolutely destroyed. And I don't know if you ever check out the highlights on MLB.com, Jeff, but they often do when they do the big highlights like that. Like they take both the TV and the radio stations of the home of the team that the highlight is about. But with Jungho Kang, they also do the radio guys in South Korea. And listening to these guys, you have no idea what they're saying, but you just love the energy coming from them. Because when he smashed the first one, they were just like, okay, got it, go! And they're just singing Gun's name. Or it sounds like they're throwing stuff over there. And they're just like, the Pirates. And you're like, I don't know what they're saying, but I love their energy right now. And they're even crazier for the second one. Because the first one, you were like, that could be gone. It is gone. The second one, you're like, oh, my, that is out of here. Like, see you later. There was a lot of excitement around that. They dropped it. They dropped a tough one in the second game of the series, but I was real proud of the way the lineup blew up on Sunday for the 10-5 win. So I was excited to see if they could come back, beat the Cardinals, because despite the Cardinals not being as good as they have been, you know, to start the season, they're still the St. Louis Cardinals. They still got a lot of winners on that team, and they're still a problem. You got to put it down. And they also beat up Michael Wacha, who has been a problem for the Pirates in the past years. And unlike Wainwright, he hasn't been going through injuries. So I don't think there's as much modesty when you can say that, oh, well, they took advantage of an injured Wainwright, like you could say when they've done in the past. But no, Wacha has been a hot guy, and they took it to him. So I think the Pirates should be holding their heads up. They got one on with one out in the top of the eighth, down 3-2. But they can still win this game tonight. But I'm happy that Gung's back. I hope they can keep working him in more. Also, Jeff, I want to hear your opinion on this. What do you think of them moving Polanco to the three spot? You know, changing up. This is the first time he's ever had it, and he lit it up on Sunday when he hit that two run shot, or was it a three run shot? But he hit a homer right over the left field wall, and a lot of people are talking, could that be his place to stay?
I think that right now, if you're Clint Hurdle, you're just trying to find the right mix. You're trying to find the right lineup. You're trying to find which batters protect other batters well. And the fact that, you know, if Polanco is in the three spot and you put Kang in the four spot, Andrew McCutchen in the two spot is going to see better pitching than if, you know, you have someone like Starling Marte strikes out a lot behind him. So you got to find out what's right for your lineup. And if Polanco being in the three slot means that McCutchen starts seeing better pitches, more pitches to hit, improves his on-base percentage, gets his batting average up there, and Polanco continues to deliver, then you might have found your mix and match. I think what the Pirates need to start to find, and this is a tough thing with a 162-game schedule, the same can be said about hockey with 82 games, is you had the teams that are the best are the teams that are the most consistent. We're talking about from every single statistical standpoint to the performance on the field to the wins and loss category, everything, consistency. So the Pirates go out and they score 10 runs off Michael Wacha on Sunday, and then they might struggle to put up three runs tonight and possibly lose to a really bad Reds team on the road.
Yeah, they're
bad. So you have this consistency issue. You have Jeff Locke goes out and pitches 6 2/3 or 7 innings of scoreless baseball, and then the next start he goes out and gets chased in the fourth inning. You've got a bullpen that looks solid as a rock at times, and then as cheap as and folds as easily as a cheap lawn chair at others. You have it's just this ongoing inconsistency, and if you can kind of right that ship a little bit, if they can just stay afloat, and let's be honest, at this point, if unless the Chicago Cubs have like a, I don't know, the mumps come through their locker room like happened to the Penguins a couple years ago, or they have injuries out the wazoo, they're probably going to win this division. So the Pirates are naturally going to be playing for a wild card, and they're still right in the mix for that. So I know that most of the time I'm Debbie Downer on the Pirates, but ultimately there's a lot of baseball left to be played. If they can stay healthy, if they can get some contributions from some of the young arms down in Indianapolis, AAA Indianapolis, and they can kind of be consistent, win. And I've always told this, my dad, anyone that asks me, the Pirates don't need to sweep teams. It's great if they do. All they need to do is just win the series. Win two out of three.
Win the series, yep.
Win three out of four. Mm-hmm. Just win the series. That's all you got to do. There's 162 games. You're not going to win every single one. And so because of that, if they can just find their groove and do that, I think they're going to be okay. I really do. They have a lot of divisional games coming up. Those are always very important when it comes to the standings. They have to win the games. They have to win the series that they're supposed to win, like against the Cincinnati Reds, like against the Milwaukee Brewers. All these teams that are coming into town, and you're like, these guys aren't that bad, but yet for some reason the Pirates struggle with some of these teams. So the future is not as dismal as maybe I painted it to be last week, or as well as some may say it is. Ultimately, though, I think the Pirates, they just need to be consistent. Period. Every coach, every player, just try to be a little bit more consistent. That's all I'm asking, man, is just consistency.
No, I hear you. Now, here's the thing about this narrative, because this was something I heard a lot of after last season, because, you know, they were one and done in the playoffs, and consistency was an issue. But despite consistency being an issue, they won 98 games last year, and you're wondering what all did they need to do better, because, you know, they won 98 games, but they were crushed in their division. I mean, I think they lost out to the Cubs in the season long series. They lost out to the Cardinals. I think the only team that they might have had a better record against was the Reds. And, you know, other than that, I think the Brewers got the best of them. It just looked like they were really struggling in the division. And then if they just take two more games, they tie the Cardinals, and, you know, for the division lead. So, you know, it's very interesting to me that you're right, because we need to win the division. We need to get out this one playoff game situation. Cervelli just struck out. They're going to be headed to the bottom of the eighth. But, you know, they need to get out this one playoff situation, because that's when you run into an Arrieta or a Bumgarner, and it's just so tough. Like, when it's someone like that and they're on fire and you have to take out their best pitcher, you know, you can't always count on that one, because a hot pitcher can get you through one game. So, you know, what do you think that they need to do, because they had the 98 wins? I'm not sure if they'll get the 98 wins again this year or get close to that, but what's the solid, you know, thing about getting consistent? What's the biggest glitch you see? Because my thing is, yeah, the bullpen's a problem. I really want a big bat, a guy that can absolutely crush the ball and change the lineup so that you can put behind McCutchen or behind Marte or whoever you want to put him behind. But I want some guy that can come in there, kind of like how Joey Bautista, you know, the same guy that we let go a while ago. Someone along those lines that can scare pitchers and be like, hey, you know, I have to respect that guy, so I'm going to have to not walk, you know, this superstar that's in front of him. But what's your thing? Because I know you're a bullpen guy.
Well, I'm a pitching guy, and that's the important thing, is because if you want to know where do they need to – let's be honest. In my opinion, this is a better Pirates offense than last year. They get on base more. They're hitting the ball more. They're hitting for average better in 2016 compared to last year. In that aspect, and I know they struggle with runners in scoring position. I talked about that last week. But in that aspect, they are actually a better offense. The pitching is the biggest difference. There's no consistency in pitching. And look at Gerrit Cole. I mean, that's your ace. That's your stud. That's the guy that you know that every 5 days when he goes on that mound, if you can just give him two or three runs, you got yourself a win. And it hasn't been that way this year, and that's an issue. Liriano's been streaky. Nice has been an issue. The whole rotation has been an issue. And because of that, mind you, that last year They had players, they had pitchers like J.A. Happ. They had another innings eater in A.J. Burnett. Even though he wasn't always winning games, he would always pitch into the sixth inning. That decreases the amount of time that the bullpen is being used. The bullpen has been extremely taxed so far in this early portion of the season. And I think that has a lot to do with the fatigue. They're not pitching as well. I think ultimately if they can get better starting pitching, this team is built around the offense and getting on base and working the counts, trying to get to the opponents into the bullpen. So it'll be interesting to see exactly how they work this. Some of the decisions that are made, like even tonight in the seventh inning, John Neese is due up to bat. And they let him bat for some reason. And then in the next inning, he gives up the go-ahead home run. All three runs for the Reds tonight has been off home runs. It's just, I just don't get that. You know, your pitcher gave you six solid innings. Be happy with that. Go to your bullpen. Get your matchups that you want. Instead, they keep him in. They let him bat for some reason. And he gives up the home run the next inning. It's that type of stuff that I don't get. But nonetheless, it is what it is. The Pirates are the Pirates. They're going to be up and down all season. You just hope that they win more than they lose and that they ultimately can be around 90-some wins. I think that'll be like the watermark for that wild card contention as when all is said and done. But the Pirates, like I said, they're the Pirates. Now, let's talk a little bit about the Steelers. Steelers, obviously that's our bread and butter. That's right in our wheelhouse. It's behind the steel curtain of the Pittsburgh Steelers website. The Pittsburgh Steelers hosted their rookie minicamp this past weekend. And we got to see, obviously some new numbers. Some players picked the numbers. Now, before fans go out to NFL.com or NFL Shop and decide they're going to buy the Travis Feeney jersey or the Artie Burns jersey, understand that there's a chance that they'll actually switch their numbers. If a player gets cut or a player gets released, whatever the case may be, they can grab that number, whatever you want to say. What were your thoughts on the rookie minicamp? It was announced today that four players that were in right minicamp, tryout players, actually made the team, and they had to release four players for their 90-man roster. What is your take on minicamp in terms of the Steelers this year, and maybe just minicamp in general?
Well, you know, years ago, I might have been last year, I forget if it was last year or 2 years ago, but Mike Tomlin said it's just football in shorts, which really that's all it is. I mean, they're doing run-throughs and really walk-throughs to try and see, you know, what players have, you know, what their fundamentals are like. They're trying to see those, you know, basics and trying to see, like, okay, where are they at athletically? You know, what can they do so that they can get them ready for the real camp that's going to come in August? So I don't put a whole lot of stock into it. What I do like to see is, you know, a player that we picked in the draft, how do they come into the mini camp? You know, are they really in shape? Do they impress the eyes by the people that were there and had a chance to see it? And you know, it seems like the buzz right now, at least by the sports talk guys, is that Sean Davis, the safety for Maryland, which was selected in the second round, seemed to be the highlight. And you know, there's a lot of people questioning, will he be able to start now? You know, for the season opener against the Washington Redskins. Because you know he seemed like he ran really well. They said his footwork was there, and it raises the question because really his main competition is Robert Golden, number 21, who you know he had an okay year at the position. He made some plays here and there. He seemed like he wasn't really out of place, but he's not like a super athlete and he's not that big. So a lot of people, you know, he seems very replaceable to many people. So you know I think that's a narrative to keep your eye on just to see how that goes pushing into camp. Will Davis push Golden for the starting spot? Davis took number 28 so far, but you know that my thing is this: people are going to say a lot of things. You don't know what anything like you know even in preseason you don't know what's going to happen until you get the actual start till game one of the regular season. Who's starting? Who's making plays? Who's knocking heads out there and being the catalyst? You know, as far as the four guys that made it, we saw Stingley who came back as a running back. They had a 5'8" receiver / running back / returner in Brandon Brown Dukes that made it on the tryout. Marcus Tucker from Northern Michigan, a wide receiver that was 5'10", 190, and an actual. I thought this was interesting. A veteran cornerback from the Kansas City Chiefs, drafted in 2009, Donald Washington. He was released back in 2011. He's played in the Canadian Football League since then, and he took a leave of absence from football, but he's back, and they brought him on. So I think that could be interesting, and keep an eye out. You know, a guy that's a veteran, he knows how to play football. You know, he's obviously been in the system before. That could be someone that works their way into the depth chart to help, you know, should there be, you know, problems in the secondary. If Artie Burns doesn't pan out, if Durant Grant isn't panning out, you know, or if Ross Cockrell and William Gay take injuries, you know, or Senquez Golson, because he's the other guy in the equation. So I thought that was interesting. But like I said, it's all football and shorts. At the end of the day, this is not going to matter that much. You're not going to find the diamond in the rough. But, you know, it's good to see when people at least, you know, it's the first step in a 1,000-mile journey. If you take the right step, you're looking good. So between those guys, and then I also heard that Tyler Malkovich, I'm never going to get this guy's name right until the start of the season, but the 7th-round pick linebacker out of Temple, who won the Bednarik Award for best linebacker in the NCAA, they said he had a really good rookie mini camp, and that he wowed people and was like, hey, he looks like a Steelers linebacker. Now, again, not super athletic, but if the guy can be in the right places and he can learn the playbook really well, then make himself available as a playmaker, I think that's the big thing. So between that and Hargrave apparently being a playbook junkie, you know, those are really the only things that I'm keeping an eye on after minicamp. But what about you?
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing, I'm glad you actually brought up Sean Davis, because on the website, in the comment section on Twitter, which you can follow us on Twitter at BT Steel Curtain, I've had a lot of people ask me, out of all the rookies, who do you think has the best chance to start? And since day one, when I got to, you know, sit down and actually study some of these players, look at the film, I said Sean Davis. And there were people that said, you're crazy. Have you watched his film? Is this from his senior season? Blah, blah, blah. Some people went as far as to say Javon Hargrave, because of the position he plays with the nose tackle, and Daniel McCullers was an impressive. And they all have every one of those people has a right to their opinion, and I understand that. And I was like, hey, you make a good point. I look at Sean Davis, and I see a guy that, I've been doing these breakdowns. I shouldn't even call them breakdowns, because I'm not breaking down the film. But on the website, where I find a broken-down film of the individual draft picks, and I just put them there and say, you know, hey, everyone can watch a highlight reel, and you're going to see the best plays. But what about the plays where they miss a tackle? Well, these are on this breakdown. And so I did one for Hargrave, and everyone's like, well, that was great. But, you know, he's not playing against the best competition. I did one for Artie Burns. And I was getting ready to publish one for Sean Davis. And I stopped myself, and I said, I can't put this 2000, I think there were two or three games, these 2015 films on this article based on the fact that it's of him playing cornerback. He's not playing cornerback. He's going to be a safety. I had to go dig a little bit further. I found a highlight reel, which is not what I like to use in this situation, but I found a 2013 highlight reel when he played safety. And when you watch that, you see what the Steelers saw. And this is a guy that reads the ball extremely well, has unbelievable athleticism. He can tackle. He's not afraid of contact. He can play in the box. He can also play in coverage. I mean, if they move the guy to cornerback, he has to have some coverage skills. I'm not saying he's the best cornerback ever. Pro Football Focus broke that down perfectly for everybody. What I'm saying is that for him, he has a really good chance, in my opinion, of starting. If he can play the mental game, if he can show that he knows the playbook, that he can play alongside Mike Mitchell. And then let's keep in mind here that this is just rookie minicamp. There's no veterans out there. He's not running next to Mike Mitchell. Robert Golden isn't out there playing. This is just a bunch of rookies and tryout guys getting their feet wet. Some people trying to impress, and ultimately just, like I said, getting exposure to the system. If he can show that he can play mentally, he has every single physical tangible that you would want from a safety. He's got the size, he's got the speed, he's got the hit, he can hit, you name it. So that's the big question. So for me, you know, I'm glad you said that people were talking about him, because I think he is the player that if I had to pick one player that's going to see the field the most in 2016 for the Pittsburgh Steelers out of the rookie class, I'm going to go with Sean Davis. My question for you is, who would you pick of the draft picks if you think this guy's going to play the most? Doesn't mean they have to be a starter, but they're going to get the most snaps. Here's the guy and why. Who do you have?
No, that's my pick is Sean Davis, because simply because of the safety depth or lack thereof, you know, that the Steelers are working with. You know, really it's Mike Mitchell, Shamarco Thomas, and Robert Golden. And Shamarco Thomas has not proved – the only thing that Shamarco Thomas has proven is that he can't be reliable. I think going into this season, they're looking for that kind of caliber player that can step up and make things happen. So I think Sean Davis, so long as he follows through, he does his job and learning the playbook and being a competent guy, they're going to want to throw him out there. They're going to be like, hey, you need to go out here and, you know, and make some plays. Now, they might not start him, you know, all the time. He may not earn the starting spot, but I think you're going to see more of him, especially when they go with those 3-3-5 looks, based on how athletic he is and how he can flow between safety and corner. And, yeah, he didn't look good as corner in college, but a guy that they can switch between, they might be interested in that. So I think if you're looking at this rookie class, I think that's who you might see. But also keep an eye out for Hargrave. If he can earn his way, because here's the other thing. There's a big hole at the top of the defensive line, the defensive tackle depth chart position. And if Hargrave can work between being a defensive tackle and defensive end, they may try to spell him in the place of Tuitt and Hayward when they need a blow. And I think that if he has a good training camp in August and a good preseason, we could be seeing a lot of the Gravedigger, coming in throughout this season, because the Steelers really need to spell. I think they said Hayward and Tuitt played like 95% of all defensive snaps last season. It was something ridiculous like that. They are great players for us right now, but you can't if they get hurt. It puts you at a major disadvantage. So you want to get them off the field. You want to keep them healthy, but you want to have guys that you can depend on as backups, and that's what we didn't have last year. So that's what we're hoping we get with Hargrave. So when it comes to the three, when they do go to the 3-4, I think Hargrave might get a look. He'll be battling Stan McCullers, out of Tennessee, the third year player. He's huge, but he has not developed the fundamentals yet to be a consistent defensive tackle. I think that when you combine that with the possibility of Hargrave being a defensive, a 3-4 defensive end in the 3-3-5 or 2-4-5 front, I think that he could also get the look. So those would be my top two picks. I think Burns could be, but I honestly just don't know enough between how they're going to play him and how they're going to use him and his athleticism with when you have a reliable guy in William Gay and a guy that was starting to prove reliable in Ross Cockrell, as well as the guy before him, that's Senquez Golson. So I think that he just has a tougher road to hoe to earn a spot. But as far as safety and defensive tackle, look out for Davis and Hargrave.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I was asleep on Artie Burns, though. I mean, he's another player that if he can prove that let's be honest, the Steelers secondary is not good. I mean, there's people that will say, there's no way he's going to be out Ross Cockrell. Well, I mean, he was a part of the 30th ranked pass defense last year. It's not like you're talking about a rookie, an Artie Burns, taking over Richard Sherman's position on the team. We're talking about Ross Cockrell here, people, and this is a guy from Duke who was drafted by the Buffalo Bills and was released after his rookie season. So I think that if the Steelers are smart and if they really did their homework on these players and their coaches really coached them up, I could see all three of their first three draft picks seeing some significant snaps that's not special teams related. Artie Burns, Sean Davis, Javon Hargrave, I certainly could see all three of them pitching in and being players that ultimately could really give a good glimpse of the future of this defense. The defense is changing. The defense is kind of morphing from that 3-4 standard outside linebackers going crazy off the edge. And it's kind of going into this speed game. You look at some of the draft picks they've had. I look at Feeney. I look at Shazier, obviously. And every single draft pick they took, and on the defensive side this year, really ridiculous speed, really ridiculous athleticism. That's what this team is turning into, like a bunch of speed demons out there just running down the football. Maybe that's the answer. I mean, it's going to be different. It's going to be something that fans are going to have to get acclimated to. I think one stat you can point to directly that it's going to point to the kind of the transitioning of the Steelers' defense is that a defensive lineman has led the team in sacks the last two seasons, not an outside linebacker. To me, that speaks volumes, absolutely volumes. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle these rookies. It's going to be interesting to see how they throw them out there. Are they just going to put them sparingly out there, like in sub packages? Are these going to be guys that they have potentially, potentially see as starters, maybe in the second half of the season? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see, Chris. Absolutely. What do you think?
I think that the one thing that we can look at is the change in ideology as far as the picks go that the Steelers have had in recent drafts. You had Jarvis Jones, who was a bigger guy that wasn't as fast in the draft, and he was a pick that was supposed to fit the mold of a 3-4 outside linebacker, but he wasn't the athlete that maybe the teams were looking for, but he still went in the fifth as the 15th overall pick. But when the Steelers had a chance at a middle linebacker, they had the presumptive number one pick, and C.J. Mosley was on the board. Experienced, played for Alabama, big-time hitter, good player, not as fast as Ryan Shazier, so they took Ryan Shazier. Ryan Shazier, he's definitely the better athlete between the two, but Mosley, he was the tougher guy that fit the mold of a 3-4 inside linebacker, and he won Defensive Rookie of the Year there both in that rookie year, but since then, in this past season, I think it's safe to say that Shazier has a better sophomore season in the NFL. And I think you see that again with Artie Burns. I think you see it, we haven't seen it, produced yet with Senquez Golson, but I think that's what the team's going for with that. I think that their reload on defense, they need guys that can create mayhem. Big, slower guys that, like Lamar Woodley and Jason Worlds. And as great as Lamar Woodley was for his early part of his career in Pittsburgh, I think that they're kind of moving past needing the guys that are slower in space, and that can take on big offensive tackles, because you need those guys in a system like Cam Hayward. But as far as the linebackers, they definitely want to put the speed out there. Bud Dupree, he's a guy that he's no slouch. He can get off the ball, and when he gets going, he can get. I think once he gets into his stride of his career, which could happen this season, when he gets it going, I think he's going to be a problem, because he is really quick off the ball, and that was what you noticed when he was coming from Kentucky in his college tape. So what they're looking for is dependable athletes, and I think those are the two things. First, you want the super athletes so that they can fly around, but you got to coach them to be dependable, because when they are dependable, then you're looking at guys that aren't just flying around and doing just chaotic, but they're organized chaos. And that's what you want from a defense wreaking havoc on everyone. So dependability is a big factor. Speaking on dependability, we're going to give a shout out to our sponsor, Frank Walker Law. If you're talking about dependability, when you're in a jam and you need the help of an experienced attorney, there's no one else other to call than Frank Walker and his firm. Frank Walker Law is the top criminal defense firm to call in Western Pennsylvania and Northern West Virginia, and home to one of the nation's top ranked 100 trial attorneys in Frank Walker. Frank Walker, if you've seen him, he's been on the news, he's been all over. You can go to his website, frankwalkerlaw.com, where you can see his clips on the news, you can see his past cases and what he talks about and what he values as far as making sure that you understand what you're really up against. He doesn't sugarcoat things, but he also lets where the hope lies. You can also check out his Facebook page by searching Frank Walker Law. There he has several ads for his website. You can read more about what he focuses on. But if you're a person that's struggling with a DUI charge or other charges as part of the criminal atmosphere, or you have a personal injury case, Frank Walker is one of the best attorneys that you want going to trial for you. So Frank Walker Law, they provide real talk, real experience, and real results. You can call today, 412-212-3878. Their office is located downtown, 428 Forbes Avenue, Suite 1800. Remember to visit frankwalkerlaw.com. We thank him for sponsoring our show and wanting to get his message out here through here. So, I think that's that. We're going to get to some callers right now. As far as people on the line, we have a number 646-355-5738. You're on the air with the Black and Gold Blitz with Chris and Jeff.
What's up, guys? It's Bryce calling from Brooklyn.
Bryce from Brooklyn. What's up, the show regular, man? Glad to have you on. How you doing this week?
Yo, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. How you both doing?
We're doing great. We're doing great, man. What you want to talk about today?
So two things. One, I guess the first point to kind of piggyback off of what you were talking about, what you just finished talking about before the advertisement, was the outside linebackers and the pass rush. And I know, you know, at the end of last season, you know, Jeff and I were kind of – Jeff made a great point about how, you know, towards the end of the season, the edge rushers just were non-existent. So while I think the first three picks have a really good chance to get significant time, I think a sleeper guy, particularly in sub-package football, could be Feeney, because Feeney brings a lot of athleticism, very raw, of course, needs to get stronger. But I think, and I think there was just a – Joey Porter was just – quoted as talking about there could be some special packages for him. So look for this guy to maybe get a little bit more snaps than what people think, because they want to get that athleticism, that freakish speed kind of off the edge, on the field, and kind of utilize that in a way to create havoc or organize havoc, as you just said, and get sacks. What do you guys think about that?
You know, for me, when I watched the film, I sat there and I was like, you know what? I just don't see a 3-4 edge rusher. And you watch some of these plays where some of the bigger offensive linemen that had definitely had a good break of a good drop back off the line of scrimmage, he was kind of stymied by them. He definitely doesn't have the moves to be some of these offensive tackles in the NFL level, but he does have that athleticism. And I don't know what it is, but there's something about me that's constantly been thinking that this guy is going to be a sub-package freak. I don't think it's necessarily going to be in the way that most people think. I can see them going into either the 3-3-5 hybrid that we saw a little bit last year, or even a 4-3 look. And I could see him and Shazier and Timmons being the three linebackers, him being technically an outside linebacker, and having the ability to blitz and having the athleticism to do so and get pressure on the quarterback, or play in space, which he is going to be comfortable doing based on the fact that he is so fast and he has the size. He could bulk up his frame a little bit, but I certainly see this as an opportunity for him to get on the field and to be an impact player. Because let's be honest, it seems like the Steelers are putting together a defense that's trying to contend with the New England Patriots. The New England Patriots, the way that they spread the football out, the way that they attack with those tight ends, it seems to me like you watch them draft, like with Sean Davis, with Feeney, with Shazier, and you can go back even further than that, and you would see this guy is like, they're basically picking guys to try to slow down Tom Brady and his arsenal. And so I think that that's definitely an option for the Steelers. Will we see him as a 3-4 edge rusher? I definitely would think they would put Anthony Chiquillo in before him, but it's all going to see how it plays out in training camp as well as mini camp. I do think there's a spot for him on the team. I just don't know if it's in the standard 3-4 base. What do you think, Chris?
I agree with you. And I'm not even sure if it's Tom Brady. It's definitely his style of play. But, I think the Steelers took note after the way that they got dinked and dunked in Super Bowl 45 against the Packers. And I think you started to see them try to make the switch. First, they needed to address the offensive line, which is what they spent, two or three years doing. But I think that they've been trying to address this because Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and even regular quarterbacks, are starting to be able to realize that we can dink and dunk the Steelers and work our way down the field and then have a good shot at a red zone opportunity to put the ball in the end zone. And that's what's killed us over the years. And I wouldn't say actually killed us, because at the same time, the defense has, shut it down. While ranking 30th against the pass last year, fourth in sacks to third in sacks. And we were ranked in the top 10 as far as points allowed. The defense, while giving up plenty of yards to the air, they still have some things working for them. But I definitely think that there's a shift in the focus all across the NFL, and the Steelers are getting to it now. With you need speed guys to cover speed guys, and you need quick guys to cover quick guys, and to take away these under routes that are crushing us. In the past, it made sense to play back, force them to come to you, keep the play in front of you, because then you could rely on if the other team was trying these big shots down the field, that they would get that you would get a mistake or that your pass rush would get there. But now with shortening it up with three-step drops and throws, and that being a consistent thing across the NFL more and more as the years go on, you got to adjust your style of play. Pass rushers, aren't as valuable when they only have 2 seconds to get to the quarterback. And that's how I say they're not valuable, because you saw what Von Miller did in the Super Bowl and all the way to the Super Bowl this year. But when you're dealing with this, the best team that can address that is a team that can run with the receivers, create tighter windows for quarterbacks to throw to. And when you give the tighter windows, it makes them hesitate more. It makes them think, okay, I can't just throw that pass. And that will give the extra tenths of a second for a Bud Dupree or for a Jarvis Jones or a Cameron Hayward to get there. So I think it is imperative that the Steelers continue to get faster on defense. And I think what they realize that on both sides of the ball, you have to build from the front back. You can't try to, you know, draft the superstar defensive backs before having the solid front to manage to control the line of scrimmage. Because as much as people raved about the Legion of Boom and the secondary of the Seahawks, their defensive front has been nasty over the past few years, and they drive a lot of problems for opposing teams and create opportunities for that secondary to make plays. So I think that the Steelers, they have their system, they know what the system is, and I think now they're pretty comfortable with that, with their defensive front and Cameron Hayward, Stephon Tuitt, Ryan Shazier, Lawrence Timmons, Bud Dupree, maybe Jarvis Jones, maybe Arthur Moats. That's probably the biggest question, is who's going to be the other outside linebacker next to Bud Dupree for the future. But yeah, you see them develop in their secondary now, and now we got to see how these guys play out. Will they be able to run with receivers? Can they take away, you know, the players that are like Antonio Brown, that can keep and they can stay under you, they can make you miss, and they can create problems all over the field. So that I do agree. That's what they're addressing, and I like the way they've done it so far. So we just got to hope that Sanquez Golson, Artie Burns, and Sean Davis, they can all pan out to be contributing members of this secondary, so that we see more turnovers happen in 2016.
You know, Chris, I think you're spot on with that, and we started to see the fruits of that kind of front to back labor in 2014. I think where this front seven started, not consistently enough, but started to stop the run better from 2012 and 2013. They started to stop the run better. That ranking started to go up. They started to reform and say, look, we know our defense isn't great, but let's put our hat on something. And 2014's defense was, we can stop the run. They weren't consistent enough with it, but that started. And then which kind of bled into last year, where by the end of the season, it was tough to run the football on the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, they had a couple bad games, but consistently that front seven really started to round out, where I felt, if not for, like you said before, them wearing down in the defensive line, they were stuffing Denver. And Denver was having a really hard time until those final drives when the D-line didn't have enough rotating players, bringing Hargrave and other guys. But, you know, so you're definitely right, and now it's the secondary's turn. You want to be able to pattern read. You got to be able to pump and run on these guys and get them off their spots because, I mean, forget three-step drops. People are getting two-step, one-step, everything is timing.
Right.
I mean, it's a passing game fiasco now. So, I mean, because the running back position has been so devalued because of it. So you just got to be able to have those guys that can be quick, bump up on guys, knock passes down, to give your edge rushers a little bit more time to get there. So I think you're spot on with that, man.
Thanks. I think if you go back to when they played the Carolina Panthers 2 years ago, and you saw there was a big win for them early in the season, you heard Ryan Shazier as a rookie, quoting Dick LeBeau at the time, saying that we have to get stops on first down to make second and long, so that we can make stops on second downs to make third and longs, and then put them in passing situations that aren't so easy timing patterns for people. And that is what that's what Dick LeBeau was preaching, and I'm pretty sure Keith Butler was coming in saying the same thing, you know, when he took over, is that we have to create second and longs so we can get to third and longs so that we can force the pass, and then they can't just do a two-step drop because the receiver can't get 10 yards down the field in less than a second. You know, so when you do that, when you take away a ground game and you could play up and be consistent and you could force teams to have to throw more, that gives you those opportunities to make those kind of plays. So I agree with you 100%. That's what they've been doing, and I think it's great, you know, on your part to even note the years when they were doing it, because they had to address that, you know, coming into when in 2011, when you started to notice that Harrison was getting older, Keith was getting older, Casey Anthony was getting older. People were starting to run on us, and that just wasn't the Steelers. You know, we became very spoiled throughout the 2000s when nobody could run on us. I mean, Aaron Smith, Kimo Von Ohlhoff, and Casey Hampton, and then when Kimo Von Ohlhoff left, Brett Keisel came in. I mean, you just didn't move the ball on the ground on the on those guys. And if you did, it was once in a while, or we had a bad season, or someone was hurt. And then Chris Hoke would fill in. I mean, they were just so locked down, and we became spoiled. I think we took that for granted, and then when it went away, it was like, man, you know, oh, our defense is horrible. It's like, well, part of it is because we had legendary players there, and now they're gone, and it's not easy to just find a Casey Hampton out there in the world. But they're doing their ways to address it, and I've very much enjoyed the additions. I think Cameron Hayward's a beast. I think Stephon Tua is a beast. I'm interested to see how McCullers continues to develop. I'm interested in this Hargrave kid, but also with their linebackers. Timmons is the man. I've been a fan of him for a while. We have to restructure him. I really want to keep him because we can't afford to keep paying him what we're paying him. And I do want to keep him in there. He knows the system. He's becoming a guy. He has become a guy that we can rely on in the middle of the field. And the way Shazier's developing, you know, there's so many good things to say there. But, you know, I want to keep seeing it going.
Yeah, I mean, I started to notice it in 2014 after Game 6 when the Browns just annihilated us on the ground. What an embarrassment.
But towards the
end of the year, if you said, okay, what does this Steeler defense do well? Not a lot of things, but you're like, they're starting to stop the run better. They're starting to feel. They're starting to hit. And that showed in the ranking. I mean, if there's one thing the defense started doing well was run defense. So I think now they're starting to really come back around with that. But to Jeff's point, you know, now the pass rushers got to get better. Those edge rushers, they got to get more pressure off the edge. That wasn't good, but I think they're trying to address that now. So you're right. It's like everything is going front to back, getting to the secondary. I really like Sean Davis. I think he does bring a versatility where in a pinch he can play corner, or in certain sub-packages he can go out and guard different guys. I think he can take away running backs. He can cover tight ends. He might be able to get on a fourth receiver and give you some versatility to blitz. So that's a good pickup, and that's addressing kind of that front-to-back you talked about.
Yeah, I agree. Jeff, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, since from Dick LeBeau back in the Blitzburg era, even Dom Capers, they all said the same thing. You have to stop the run. If you can't stop the run, the offense is going to be able to do whatever they want. And so you have to make them one-dimensional. And the Steelers have never been the team that has ever said, well, we're going to stop the pass first, and then we'll worry about the run. It's never been that way. And so, yeah, they've made some good decisions. Cameron Hayward has panned out. He didn't show signs early in his young career as a rookie or second-year player. Stephon Tuitt, I think, could be even better, in my opinion. You got to find that nose tackle. I think people forget that Daniel McCullers is so huge that if you just put him, if they do run that base 3-4 and they need someone to just plug the middle, you'd be hard-pressed to find a guy that could just go in, take up two blockers, and let Shazier and Timmons just roam. You know, that's what they used to do with Casey Hampson, James Ferrier, and Larry Foote. They would just basically read the play. They'd read Big Snack, and they would just go and make a play. I think that he could fill that role. And then you have Hargrave. Don't forget about LT Walton, who was drafted last year, as possible guys that can come in and spell Hayward into it. I think that's Hargrave. His role this year will be as depth. I don't think he's going to start. I think he could see the field, but I don't think he's going to be a guy. I think they're going to want him in specific situations. You watch this film, he's got great pass rushing technique for an interior guy. I'd love to see him put them in there at the three, you know, three down linemen, put him in the middle and let him kind of get after the quarterback. It'll be interesting, but I definitely see that the back end is starting to catch up. You have that veteran in William Gay. You've got some of the young guns now with Cockrell, with Golston, now with Artie Burns and with Davis. It'll be interesting to see how they learn on the job, because if you look at the Steelers' history and the defensive side of the ball, they've always had that veteran there to kind of lead them along, whether it's Troy Polamalu, whether it was Ryan Clark, whether it was Ike Taylor. Well, now you got Mike Mitchell and you got William Gay. I think those are two good leaders for the guys. It's going to be, and I said this on the website in written form, and I'll say it here over the air, this rookie class is going to be based on the coaching staff, because they're all very, very raw. Artie Burns, Sean Davis, Hargrave, all the way down the line, even with Hawkins, the offensive tackle, Feeney, you just keep going. They're all very, very raw. it's going to be on this coaching staff to actually get the best out of this team. So everyone always criticizes Carnell Lake as a secondary coach. This year, he finally has some pieces to work with. I mean, let's be honest. When you have guys like Antoine Blake who you're trying to turn into something that he's not, you don't really have much to work with. So you can't really fault the coach.
Right.
Now they've given him the picks that he needs. Now let's see what he can do. If they don't perform now, then the finger might be able to be pointed at Carnell Lake. But right now, I'm anxious to see what he can do. We know what Munchak can do in terms of Hawkins, the offensive lineman. But it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with this. I'm really excited for this draft class, and they didn't even have a big name in the draft class. So that tells me they got what they needed. They didn't necessarily get the best player available all the time. They got what they needed, and that's what I'm excited for. But, Bryce, do you have any other questions before we let you go?
Yeah, guys. I mean, since we're kind of into it, who do you think of the fifth cornerback, Duran Grant? If Davis is safety with flexibility play corner, you know, what do you think of Grant in terms of coming in as the fifth corner, being able to play some spot safety? And then on the other end, who is the fifth receiver for this team? Minus Ayers, the return guy. They draft him to be the return guy, but minus him, who's the fifth receiver? So just those two questions.
Well, in my opinion, with Doran Grant, I think they were hoping to see a little bit more from him last year, a fourth-round draft pick from Ohio State. You were hoping to see a little bit more. He didn't see the field in a defensive set the entire season. If people forget, he was actually released when they were cutting down to 53 men right after training camp. He was a special teams guy. He kind of bounced around. I'm thinking that they're hoping that he could be a sub-package player for him. But when you draft a cornerback in the first round, you say, well, where are they going to put him? Yeah, you could talk about transitioning him to safety, which is a possibility. And that's something that Carnell Lake talked about in 2015, right after he was drafted in his post-draft press conference, is that the possibility was there for him to potentially move to safety. But even if they do, you've got Sean Davis, you've got Robert Golden, you've got Shamarco Thomas. I know people don't want to hear that, but you do have Shamarco Thomas back there. You even have I forgot his name. The long-haired safety, the special teams demon, who's technically a safety on the team. His name will come to me. But still, you wonder, where is he going to fit? Well, on the cornerback roster, you have William Gay, you've got Cockle, you've got Golson, you've got Artie Burns now. And so he was going to be the fifth cornerback. Last year, they ran a lot of sub-packages. Remember, Robert Golden came in as a third safety rather than bringing on another defensive back. They had mixed reviews with that. Obviously, in New England, it was quite an embarrassing moment when no one covered Rob Gronkowski. But still, I don't know what to think of Doran Grant. It's going to be a really important training camp for him as a second-year player to come in and try to solidify his spot, whether it's as the fourth or fifth player on the secondary or whether it might possibly be as, you know, a safety depth guy as well. I think he's going to be a special teams guy. Where does he fit otherwise? Other than the fifth wide receiver spot, I personally like Eli Rogers, but it depends on whether he's completely healed from his injuries last year. Foot injuries and ankle injuries of that kind are not just – you just tape it up and go. He has the return capabilities. He's a more polished receiver, I think, than Dominic Ayers. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits. That's my guess. Chris, what do you think about those two positions?
When you're talking about wide receiver, you know, Kyler Murphy is the clear front runner because of he was on the practice squad. He was floating between those, he's in the clear front runner. But keep an eye on Shaquin Phillips, or as Bob Pompiani likes to say, Shaquin Phillips. He was a faster guy. He made some plays in the preseason, also made some better plays in the preseason. But I think that he's an athlete, and that's again, I think the Steelers on both sides of the ball, they're looking for just pure athletes to be able to run and to change the field for people. That's why they drafted Martavis Bryant. That's why they drafted Sammy Coates. You know, these are guys that are blazers, not necessarily great with their hands, not necessarily, you know, supreme route runners, but if they're on the field, you know, the secondary is going to have to be like, okay, watch out for this guy, and sort of have the Mike Wallace factor plus a little bit of height and probably actually faster than them because of their stride. I think that you're looking at Shaquin. I keep trying not to say Shaquin. But Shaquin Phillips, I think he's a guy that has a shot in preseason in camp. And they really want one of those guys to be able to step up and take their and be able to say, like, hey, I want that. That's what you're going to see with Sammy Coates. Can he step up this year in Martavis Bryant's absence? and be a big threat, you know, down the field that can make plays. He made some plays in the playoffs last year when Antonio Brown went down. So you know that the team's going to rely on Brown, on Wheaton, and Hayward Bay to come in there as a third guy. But with Coates, you know, he's going to be fighting it. And that fifth spot, I think it's very important because, I think the team is going to be looking for guys that they, you know, for in those positions when they have to get a replacement in there. They have to, and they want to protect that depth chart because of how many players we lost last year. So the Steelers are, I think they're going to try to keep a fit, maybe a sixth guy as a return man. You know, maybe Ayers will get it, maybe Murphy will get it. But I think that we're looking for there for that there. As far as cornerback, you know, I think it's going to be interesting when you look at who they add back in the secondary. Because you want a guy that can float between, and that's what they drafted Duran Grant to be, was a floater that could play corner and play safety. And right now he's still on the roster. He just had a rookie season. He didn't really have much of a chance to prove himself. But that's what you're going to be looking for, is a guy that can do what they drafted him to do, which is why I think Sean Davis is so important and why I said he's going to get the most snaps of this rookie class this season. So when you look at the secondary at cornerback, you're looking at William Gay, Ross Cockrell. You're looking at Senquez Golson. You still don't know what he's going to do because we haven't seen him step on the field. Then you got Duran Grant. Then you got Artie Burns. You're looking at those five guys. Now you have this Donald Washington guy that's a veteran from Kansas City. I think he's going to make the roster if he still has the wheels that it takes to play the game. I think he could make the roster because the Steelers, especially Mike Tomlin, he likes veteran cornerbacks that can play in a system, know their role, and play their role. And, you know, having a guy that can be on special teams, and that's kind of how Darius Hayward Bay made the team. He became a special teamer because he knew how to play football, and he had been in the pros for a bit. He didn't catch on anywhere after being a first-round pick, and now he's here making plays for the offense with a three-year deal. So Don Washington, I think, could be that sixth man, that they add back there. But the only thing I could see is if he gets edged out for a tweener in the safety corner situation. So, you know, if I had to pick, I said my five cornerback, Don Washington would be the sixth if they carry one, but at safety, you got Mike Mitchell, you got Robert Golden, you got Shamarco Thomas, you got Sean Davis. And definitely there's still the opportunity for Will Allen to come back in the lineup. I know no one said his name. He's old as dirt. He's been around longer than anybody. And he's not that fast, but he knows the system. And again, the Steelers like guys that know a system. And say Mike Mitchell gets hurt, say any of these guys get hurt, I think their first call, you know, if we're close to the season, it's or in midseason, like, hey, Will, what you doing, man? Get the ball back out. So I think that you can look for that. But if all goes as planned, I think they keep they have their five. They might get a say. Might keep a sixth receiver. And that might be helped by who can be a special teamer. So Ayers, I think he's gonna, if he can prove himself as a return man, that'll be his spot. So I think that's what I'm looking at right now. We're talking about the secondary. They're gonna keep guys because again, I think they're gonna be protecting for injury and especially in these key positions in today's passing game.
Cool. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Always good talking to you guys.
No problem, Bryce. Thanks for always calling in. We're going to be wrapping up our show, guys. Thanks for calling in. If you're listening to this not live and on the iTunes, please subscribe. Please rate us on iTunes. Let us know how you're doing. Promote. We always appreciate good reviews. If you got bad reviews, keep it to yourself. We're glad to have everyone on. Right now, the Pirates, in the meantime, while we were talking about the Steelers, they lost 3-2. David Freeze had a chance with a runner on third with two outs, but he hit a deep ball that went to the warning track, and Billy Hamilton was able to track it down, and so the Pirates fall to the Reds to open the away series this week. Hey, everyone, the real storyline for Pittsburgh sports right now is the Pittsburgh Penguins hoping that they can pull out this big Game 6 win. Jeff, what's your last shout-out for the day?
My last shout-out is the Pirates lost that game in typical Pirate fashion. The ninth inning, Young hit the double. He hit the double to lead off the inning. They end up moving the runner over to third, and he gets stranded there. That's typical Pirate baseball. Pisses me off to no end. Unbelievable. I'm just going to leave it at that, okay? I don't want to go off on a 20-minute tangent and make us go long. Thanks for everyone that listened. Make sure you check out BehindTheSteelCurtain.com for your Pittsburgh Steelers needs. We don't have much on the Pirates or the Penguins except for this show. But make sure you, like Chris said, you subscribe to iTunes, and make sure you check back next Monday night, and hopefully we're talking about the Eastern Conference Finals. Right, Chris?
Yes, indeed. Go Pens!
That's right. We'll see you next time, everybody. Thanks for listening. Bye.